7. The final two verses, Matthew 7, 28 and 29. We'll be speaking today about being astonished by authority, Christ's authority. Having finished listening now to Jesus' words in the Sermon on the Mount, it might seem a little bit strange, I guess, to spend an entire sermon on the last two little verses that Matthew writes to sum up the Sermon on the Mount. Let me read them for you together today here. And when Jesus finished these sayings, the crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he was teaching them as one who had authority and not as their scribes. We've been listening to what could be called the greatest sermon in the history of the world. Certainly a most memorable sermon, probably the most quoted sermon ever preached in the whole history of the world. But a very powerful sermon. As Jesus has shown to us, called us to true blessedness, what the fulfillment of our whole human existence means. And in doing that, he has shown us what is true kingdom righteousness. Not just the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, but something that far exceeds that. Something that's so different from that that it's almost like a qualitatively different plane altogether, because it doesn't come from man. It's God's kind of righteousness. And Jesus has illustrated that to us and called us to that. He's shown us in Matthew chapter 6 about how we practice this kind of righteousness. In a way that's designed for what God sees, not merely what men see. And at the heart of it all has been that dependence upon him expressed in prayer. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we also forgive our debtors. Lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. Bring us to that eternal home. Jesus has called us to forsake all anxiety, all worry, to place our treasure entirely in heaven, which is to say, in him and in his kingdom. And now as he's come to the end, of course, he's challenged us. He said there are two ways. There are two gates, two roads. You're going to walk one or the other. There is true fruit. There are two kinds of trees. There's true fruit and there is false. There are two kinds of building, a wise man who builds on Christ and a foolish man who builds on the sand. What are you going to do? And now it comes to the end. And this is the little summation that the Gospel of Matthew puts on this sermon. The crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he was teaching them as one who had authority and not as their scribes. Today, I want you to understand who Jesus is and what his words mean. What I'm in effect saying today is I want you to stand in amazement before Jesus Christ, the Lord, and before him alone. All other authorities, all other claims to authority have to bow to him. That's an astonishing claim. But all other authorities must bow before him in your heart. He is the only one who can bring you to the kingdom of heaven. So let me start first here with just looking at this astonishment. The crowds were astonished at his teaching. The response to Jesus' teaching rippled through the crowds that were there listening to him. They were, to use this word the Bible uses, astonished. And this, as we watch Jesus' ministry, was in fact the common response to Jesus and to his teaching throughout his entire life. In Luke chapter 2, we find that even as a boy, when we look at him, his parents finding him in Jerusalem as they found him interacting with the teachers in the temple, the Bible says, and all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when they, his parents, saw him, they were astonished. His own parents were astonished at him. In Mark 6:2, we read, and on the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished, saying, where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? How are such mighty works done by his hands? When his disciples were confronted with Jesus' teaching, even after they'd been following him for a while, they thought they knew this man. They were greatly astonished, saying in Matthew 19, when the disciples heard this, they were greatly astonished, saying, "Who then can be saved?" And down to the very last week of his life, even, as he entered Jerusalem before the crucifixion, and as he confounded the scribes and the Pharisees, the Pharisees and the Sadducees in that chapter, Matthew records this. And when the crowd heard it, they were astonished at his teaching. Jesus was continually astonishing people with himself and with his teaching. We need to recognize what was going on here. We don't experience astonishment every single day of our lives. So what is this like? Well, if you remember, for those of you here who are old enough, if you remember the response to 9/11, then you have a little bit of a sense of what this kind of astonishment is talking about. You remember perhaps what you felt as you heard about this and then began to watch the unfolding news reports, the surprise, the amazement, the wonder at what is going on here, if you watch the news, even to this day, if you go back and watch the original reporting as this was unfolding and watch the responses of the people that you see there, you saw people who were stunned. You saw people who were in shock. They were stupefied. Even the news reporters who are normally so fluent with words were dumbfounded. They didn't know how to speak about what they were seeing. That's astonishment. That's what the Bible is talking about happened when Jesus presented himself. Now, astonishment can also be because of good things. When we experience the wonder and the awe and the amazement and the glory of good things. All of this was happening when Jesus spoke. He rocked their lives down to their foundations when he presented himself. Now, why? What was it that astonished people here in this text? If this is what was going on, what was causing it? The text is clear that it was his teaching. It was his teaching because he taught having authority and not as their scribes. So that brings us to consider authority. If astonishment is what was happening, if the world was being shaken when Jesus spoke, what was it that made this? We need to consider his authority. What is authority that it could do such a thing as to rock our world? Authority is, if we can think of it this way, and I think we need to think about this in our day and age, because so often we think of authority as merely something like power, merely force, the ability to do what you want. But authority is an event. It's something that takes place in which reality is given to you to know what to do. But now it's important in authority to realize that this authority, that this disclosure, this giving to you is done by someone else. And here's what separates authority from just recognizing reality on your own, right? And saying, oh, that's what I need to do, and I do it, right? Here, it's mediated to you by someone else. Here's reality, and here's what's given to you to do because of it. And that's a good thing. Authority is a little bit like a conduit through which the clear, refreshing water of God's good and wise reality can come to your life so as to call forth growth and fruitfulness and productivity. It gives you what to do. This is what you are to do in this situation. That's what authority does. And we respond to that authority by doing what we've been authorized to do. In fact, many times, if you walk through the New Testament and see this word that's translated authority, if you were to put in there, that idea of being authorized to do something, you would pretty much have the idea, right? Jesus himself would later say that his authority was from the Father. He was authorized to do what he did by his Father. He authorized his disciples to go on their mission in Matthew chapter 10 and so forth. But this is authority, and it is crucial that we consider it. As soon as we begin to talk about authority, we enter into an area that is deeply contested in our day. In fact, maybe better said, deeply confused in our day. Authority is a constant feature of life. But nobody wants to admit what it means or where it comes from. And so we're constantly trying to invent authorities that are not authorities. We think that freedom negates authority. So if you're free, you don't have to have an authority. You don't have to answer to an authority, things of that nature. We think that freedom is against authority. Rather than realizing that true authority undergirds freedom, we need authority, and we know we need it, but we don't want to admit it, so we pretend not to have authorities while we constantly use authorities to get what we want. So let me give you an example here of how deeply embedded this confusion is in our society. I think it goes all the way down to the very way we structure ourselves as a society. Our contemporary idea of the state and the government is that it arises from the agreement of autonomous subjects, people who give themselves the law, right? I in effect am my own law, right? That's how I'm autonomous. That's how I'm free. Well, how do we have a state then? Well, we ask this: where does the government get its authority? And we answer, from the consent of the governed. All right? And then we ask, where do the individuals who give their consent get their authority? Well, we reply, they just have it. They have rights. Right? Rights are what undergirds this. So what are rights? Rights, if you listen carefully in today's discourse, are claims that I have against other people inhibiting my desires. And the state is there to protect me from people who would infringe on my rights. So who determines what are rights? We do. Based on what? What I want. What I feel I need. So let's get this straight. You are a law unto yourself, but you want a state apparatus that does nothing more than enforce what you want it to against people who might do something that you don't want. And we're trying to live basically in the fairy tale world of we are all gods. And it does nothing but create chaos and confusion. We throw out things in our day like everyone has a right to a basic income, or everyone has a right to health care. And those can sound good, can even sound altruistic. But in our current environment, they basically mean nothing more than everyone needs to give me what I feel like I need. And the state is there to enforce it. In such a situation, laws are no longer a communication of a good knowledge of working together in cooperative society, of what's real and how we work together, because we no longer acknowledge any higher reality than ourselves. Laws become to be seen as purely arbitrary, ultimately, because they're simply ourselves telling ourselves what we want to do. At the end of the day, might makes right. And thus you have people acting like that. I heard a troubling example of this just last night, and I want to bring up this example just because it's so relevant to our situation, not for political purposes, but to shine a light on ourselves. Last night, I listened to a radio interview from Ross Kaminsky of a talk radio in Denver interviewing our governor, And so when he was pressed on the legal authority by which he gave an executive order requiring face masks, the governor appealed to pragmatics. Well, it's in effect, it's irrelevant whether I have the legal authority or not. This is what's good for everybody. And so if I do this, more people will wear it, and that will be good. And so it's a good thing to do. Okay, let's forget about the whole legal thing. It's a good thing to do, in effect. Now, it's not only our governor that thinks that way, folks. This isn't to point fingers at him. This is the way a large swath of our society thinks. On the right or on the left, laws are really about what we want to do. And that's exactly the way a society in which we have no higher authority than ourselves starts to operate. Now, by the way, let me just say here, there are a number of other reasons why people might wear masks that are perfectly legitimate. I'm not saying it's wrong to wear masks here today. I'm simply saying this is the way we reason together. And what does it do? It gives us no common ground on which to work together. Why? It all goes back to we think we're gods. We don't have any higher authority to appeal to than ourselves. Jesus' words come crashing into a society like that, like a bomb on a playground of narcissists. They simply don't correspond, right? You mean I'm not God? Yes. You mean we don't get to make up the rules? Yes. You mean there really is a reality to which my life must conform if I'm going to be free? Yes. And that reality is Jesus. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by him. Folks, that is as astonishing today as it was when Jesus was on this earth and he spoke these words. It rocks people's worlds because it doesn't allow for anything about the way we think of ourselves. The text here contrasts Jesus' authority with that of the scribes. He taught as one who had authority and not as their scribes. You remember who the scribes were. The scribes were the legal experts of their day. They were the professors and teachers of the law, right? They knew all the ins and outs and the whole history of interpretation, and they had it all memorized and all these kinds of things, and they could debate and discuss for hours on all the fine points of interpretation of the law. That was their job, right? We're the experts here when it comes to the law. But according to this text, they didn't teach with authority. Jesus' teaching was so different because it was authority. The text points, I want to point out two differences here between Jesus' teaching and that of the scribes and the Pharisees, Jesus' authority and that of the scribes. The scribes taught, first of all, by the authority of others. Jesus taught by his own authority. We might say there was a difference of personally indwelling the truth. Personally indwelling the truth. There was a real connection with the reality of the truth in the life of the one speaking here. Jesus, even the man, Jesus Christ, was filled with the spirit of truth. He knew the truth. He knew reality by experience, by life, by everything. He understood it entirely. He lived according to it. He knew what it was all for and how it ought to work. And so when he taught it, he knew what he was talking about. And yet the scribes, at the same time, for all their knowledge of the law, as became so evident in the ministry of Jesus, did not understand its true heart at all. And thus they couldn't teach by that authority of a personally indwelling the truth. that had to always appeal to others. They might have been like those people, you know, who write a book where there's about two lines of text on the top of the page and then the rest of it's footnotes where they're citing everybody else that agrees with them all the time. All they do is they're constantly telling you what everybody else thinks. At some point, when you're listening to teachers like that, the question arises, are you telling me what you actually know? Are you just regurgitating the opinions of others? Do you really know what you're talking about? I think one of the reasons Jesus' teaching was so different is because he knew exactly what he was talking about, and he was communicating it. He was personally indwelling the truth, and he was becoming a personal conduit of reality. God's reality was confronting man in the person of Jesus Christ. He was that personal conduit of authority, because he personally indwelt the truth. A second difference here is that the scribes taught by the authority of men. Jesus taught by the authority of God. And this was a constant issue. If you want to just look over with me in Matthew chapter 21, briefly here, in verses 23 through 27. When he entered the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came up to him as he was teaching, and they said, "By what authority are you doing these things? And who gave you this authority?" Of course, they were looking for some legal, governmental, human authorization. You know, who said you could teach here, right? Give us your credentials. Do you have a PhD in the law? Or did the Roman governors say you could teach this? Or, okay, tell me, where are you getting this from? Now, of course, Jesus knew that in a sense, the question was not even sincere because they weren't willing to deal with themselves. So he said, "I will ask you one question, and if you tell me the answer, then I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John, from where did it come? From heaven or from man?" That's the contrast, right? Did this come from God, or was this merely authorized by man? Of course, they weren't willing to answer the question. They discussed among themselves, "If we say from heaven, he will say to us, 'Why then did you not believe him?' But if we say from man, we're afraid of the crowd, for they all hold that John was a prophet." So they answered Jesus, "We do not know." It's a nice political answer there, right? We don't know. That's above our pay grade. I can't answer those kinds of questions, right? But that's irrelevant. I don't have to. So he said to them, "Neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things." Folks, the answer was clear. Jesus did the things he did. Jesus said the things he said by the authority of God himself. There was a different source of authority going on here. There's a reason why the Bible says in Romans 13, all authority is from God. If it's true authority at all, it comes from God. It doesn't come from man. If it doesn't come from God, then it's not true authority. And that was the contrast here. Men can go after false authorities. People can set themselves up as authorities and actually not be mediating, communicating God's truth to mankind. They're disconnected from the source, if you will, and they're empty when it comes to actual authority. And that's something I want to put before you today. Watch out for all competitors to Jesus' authority in your life. Watch out for competitors to Jesus' authority. The devil himself is one competing authority. The Bible tells us at the beginning of his ministry, just before he engaged in his public ministry, Jesus went out into the wilderness and he was tempted there. The devil took him and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time and said to him, "To you I will give all this authority and their glory, for it has been delivered to me, and I will give it to whom I will. If you then will worship me, it will all be yours." And Jesus answered him, "It is written, 'You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve.'" Ultimately, authority comes down to a worship issue here, doesn't it? Who do you worship? Who do you serve and bow before? Jesus said there's only one true God. That's where authority has to come from. And if I try to take it from you, Satan, then I would be taking it illicitly. This Satan himself is one false source of authority. But man can follow in that same train. Whenever man sets himself up as an ultimate, or his knowledge as an ultimate, or his teaching as an ultimate, you're facing a competing authority, and you need to recognize it as such. One of the big ones in our day, you'll hear this word at any public debate in our day, and the reason it's invoked is because it's held up as an authority. Science. Science, right? The science says, okay. Now, there is a legitimate realm of man's knowledge. God has given to us, as we heard in our seminar this morning, to subdue this earth and to learn about it and to cultivate it and to govern it responsibly. We're learning, in a sense, we're learning about God if we understand what we're doing when we exercise this kind of knowledge in the world and exercise our responsible agency in the world. That's all good. We should explore this world. We should learn about it, learn about how it works. Try to serve other people well by doing that kind of thing. But science, like any authority, is only as good as the reality it mediates. When it ceases to be a conduit of reality, it ceases to actually have any real authority. I would ask you today, what authorities vie to be the source of your action? There are always competing voices out there saying, listen to me, listen to me. This is what's real. This is what's right. This is what's good. This is what's true. Where do you get that? In a sense, folks, all the choices boil down to two, the creature or the creator. If you try to ground authority in the creature, it will always go wrong. It has to come from the creator. The choice, there is Satan's counterfeit authority or God's authority. There is the authority of man versus the authority of God. And folks, that's why Jesus is so important. Even as he presents himself in this very sermon, what we are seeing astonishingly before our very eyes is a man. A man, yes, who's a man just like us. And yet he's talking as if he has all the authority of God. He's saying, I will tell you what the law means. I will tell you how the law is fulfilled. I will fulfill the law. I will be the judge and you will answer to me. If you build on my words and do what I say. I mean, this is God kind of talk, right? If Jesus is not God, then he's just another one of a long line of pretenders claiming authority where he doesn't have it, right? And he's mediating something evil to you. But the implicit claim here, even without him saying it in so many words, is, I am God in the flesh. All of God's authority, and here's the amazing thing, is now present among men. I have taken on flesh. I am one of you. I am the Messiah, the anointed one of God. And I am showing you God's reality, God's truth. Jesus is the joining point of God and man. How can the finite creature, and here's what our society wrestles with so impenetrably today, how can the finite creature know that he is participating in infinite truth and reality? That seems impossible. And that's why we give up. That's why we start creating alternative ways of trying to establish ourselves, right? How can we do this? Only by being united to Jesus. Listen to him. Follow him. He has the words of life. The authority of Jesus' words is the authority of God's word. This is the word made flesh. When you hear Jesus, you are coming face to face with the authority of God. That's what's happening. You want to know why Jesus was so astonishing? Why he kept rocking people's worlds? Because you are encountering God when you encounter Jesus. And when God comes to his creation, what else can creation do? You know, no human society, no human person has ever been able to solve the problem of authority without bowing to Jesus as Lord. I really think this concluding little postscript, if you will, on Jesus' Sermon on the Mount is designed to call you today to exactly that. You need to acknowledge Jesus as Lord. He has to be the whole basis of why you do everything you do. It's his authority that has to call forth your action in this world if it's to be true, if it's to be good and right. So I urge you today, always trust Jesus' words. He speaks the truth. He's the only source in this whole world, in a sense, in which you can know. You can know beyond a shadow of doubt that what he says is true. Can you know that with science? It's always that, well, maybe that's true. It's the best we know right now, right? It'll change in another 100 years, right? In 500 years, people will laugh at us for our barbaric science, right? Because we didn't know what we were doing when you thought we did. Can you trust science that way? No, you can trust Jesus. You can build your life on what he says. Always trust his words. Always submit to Jesus's words. Always take them as the real communication from God to you about how you live your life, about what you build your life on, about how we work together as God's people. Jesus is the anchor point for all thought, for knowledge, for what it means to be human, for all that's good and right and true. Jesus is in himself, if I can say it this way, the paradigm of all authority in creation. And you can test all authority, all claims to authority, by its conformity to Jesus. That's how you can know if it's true authority. Will you do that today? And always? Folks, we live in trying times. But I want to encourage you today, there is a word of authority that cuts through all the chaos, all the confusion, and that communicates to you the blessedness of the kingdom of heaven. That's the word of Jesus. Listen to him. Today I want you to see the astonishing authority of Jesus. If you would accept that authority today as the authority by which governs your entire life and existence, will you confess that today by saying Jesus is Lord? Let's do it together as a congregation. Jesus is Lord. Amen.